extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G virtual studios and actually hosted from New York, New York. David Goss here alongside Matt Doyle and Kalen Carr. Andrew Wiebe is no longer with us. No, I'm just kidding. Andrew Wiebe's not here today, but every once in a while, just to keep the swag of the show alive, we have to actually host the show from New York City just so that we can like maintain our residency here as a New York-based show and not a Midwest-based show. Is that Kansas?
Yeah, Kansas is like right smack dab in the Midwest. So, yeah, we have the New York energy. I think even Kalen's back in New York, right?
Yeah.
No longer traveling the world.
Where do you guys think I go?
I don't know, man. Like,
says the dude who's like,
you on Instagram in a different city.
I did go to Philly this weekend.
Yeah, there you go.
Warren Craval's birthday. So, shout out to Warren.
You only travel to places with peas, though. Philly, Portugal.
Yeah.
So, either you're headed for Portland next. Or it's going to be a long flight to the Philippines.
I could go to Portland. Portland sounds fun.
Which
maybe
Portland?
People aren't feeling so great today, but...
Yeah, very true. And we will get to that in just a moment. Appreciate that, Kalen. But it's a city with goals. You love goals, so...
I do.
It could work for you. So we'll get to all of the wildness that was MLS over the course of this weekend. It was awesome to watch. A lot of fun. Obviously, we'll talk our favorite young players. We got a conversation coming about contenders and tiers and all of that as we love to... you know, parse words and complain about everything that doesn't matter while the teams go out and actually play and put together points and move on. And of course, the mailbag as well on MLSsoccer.com. We've got Doyle's column, as always, on Monday. You can see a tribute video that Dax McCarty's former teammates put together and current teammates for his 400th MLS League appearance. And then Sam Jones has a piece celebrating Joseph Martinez's long-awaited home goal. I think it's been 2 years since he scored at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Let's start with a shout-out to the winner of our Extra Time Fantasy League. That's Bahe Khan Trenza. Who knows if I said it right, but it's a name, so can't be wrong, who put up 108 points and held off Star Wars A New Who Hope to win the week by Captain Daniel Shallowy, who we'll talk about in a moment. Let's start with some big action coming up, which is we are like a week and a half away from the MLS All-Star Game in 2021. It's Wednesday, August 25th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FS1, 2DN, TSN, and TVA, which apparently, by the way, TSN ripped me for questioning Tejan on a clip that I can't get access to in the United States. So I'm very pumped about that as well. I always love a good TSN broadcast. We've got the Skills Challenge coming up the Tuesday before the All-Star Game. So that one will be August 24th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FS1, 2DN, TSN, and TVA as well. That one presented by AT&T 5G. There are still tickets available if you're in the LA area, which I think might be awesome to go to, because this is a studded group of players that's going to be a part of this Skills Challenge. Some added events as well. We've got the young studs, Ricardo Pepi, who's going to be a part of this, going up against a bunch of Liga MX All-Stars. And Pepi, when asked about it, was like, yeah, it's just cool to be around everyone. It's just cool to be a part of it. And it's like, dude, don't be humble. I feel like you know that some of the veterans are going to be like taking it easy. Pepe's going bike kicks. Pepe's going to give it all, I feel like, in this event. And last event, it was Chris Mueller who came out the star. My early pick is Ricardo Pepi for MLS Skills Challenge MVP of 2021.
Where is this taking place? Where is the Skills Challenge this year?
Oh, Kalen always has to come in with a question that I didn't know. Bank of California Stadium.
Okay, so it's in the stadium. Okay,
yeah.
That's cool. I feel like people may have forgotten about, you know, it's been so long. We had to sit out a year, but the Skills Challenge was... awesome. One of the highlights for me from the last All-Star, and like a really cool new thing. And I think, you know, when I think of All-Star games, I was telling you guys before I went to the NBA All-Star dunk contest before in Houston, which was, you guys were giving me a hard time. You were like, where were you sitting? Down by the courtside? I was like, I was at the top.
Let me tell you, if you watch the 2011 All-Star dunk contest, it goes Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter, Kalen Carr, Kevin Garnett sitting on the sideline.
I was so high
that's
up
the lineup.
I was too embarrassed to bring a date. So, anyways, but the skill back to the skills challenge. It was. I mean, you get really close. You can get close to the players. You can get close to the experience and like. It, you know, it's an all-star event, so all the stars are coming out. And when I saw the list released of the skills challenge, I mean, even the Liga Mekis teams are...
Sambu!
Yeah. Sambu was built in a lab for a skills challenge. He was not running anywhere, and he could do anything with the ball that he wants.
But it does turn a little bit into... like it can turn into a little bit of an endurance challenge because you're throwing like side, they do the cross and volley and you're throwing side volleys. You're taking balls out of the air. It's not just a chill crossbar challenge thing. So I think youth could be a smart pick here. I like the peppy sleeper pick to steal the show.
I will say from the last skills challenge, one of the coolest moments was Ace Ace, who was at Atleti, who was part of it as the opponent, hanging with Jonah Dos Santos and Vela, like, them going against each other, joking around about it, enjoying it, Nani there. And it's like, yeah, sometimes it's cool to watch really famous, impressive people just be normal people and have fun and enjoy it. And this event's going to be cool. Goalkeepers are now added in. That wasn't a part of it last time. So right now it's Matt Turner and Pedro Gallese and Alfredo Talavero and Nahu Guzman, who has been one of the most entertaining goalkeepers in the world over the last few years at Tigres. I can't imagine what the hair is going to be for this, as well as what he's going to do on the field. So tickets available still for both the skills challenge and the game. And this is the game I've been waiting for 15 years, right? Like the All-Star game is fun. It's cool. But this is unique to soccer and this is unique to our region. And this is what I wanted to see, was the best in Liga MX versus the best in MLS.
Yeah, it felt like the previous format of the All-Star game had kind of run its course.
It was exciting when it started.
Exactly. And you know, we just have so much better access to, you know, the great teams in the world, you know, whether it's when Chelsea came or Manchester United or Atleti as it came 2 years ago. Like there's just a little more juice. Because it is the best of MLS versus the best of Liga MX. And, like, that's what, you know, it's still a hill that the league has got to climb. And granted, it's an all-star game. It's not the same thing as CCL or Campeones Cup or Leagues Cup. But it still feels like it's going to matter a little bit. So, yeah, I'm jacked for it. And I'm usually not one who is particularly excited about the all-star game. I'm going to be dialed in for this one.
I think you also appreciate the attacking stars from Liga MX and not a Diego Simeone team in a quote-unquote entertainment event.
The entertainment was watching him manage from the
side. Oh, man.
Yeah. Just sitting right behind him. He was not treating it like an all-star match, so I respected that. But, yeah, I think Chicharito and Vela will, you know, steal the headline, the headlines because of their history with the national team. But even when you look at like Zela Rayan and Rui Diaz and players that played in Liga MX and coming up to MLS too, there's a lot more crossover, not just between the competitions, I guess, between the lines, but also with the transfer and the way that, you know, both leagues are basically picking off talent from each other.
Also, just to finish on this with the news that David Ochoa has, you know, officially joined the Mexican National Team Federation. There's rumors around Julian Araujo as well. If Ricardo Pepi crushes this All-Star game, the 2DN broadcast will melt down. So I'm here for those numbers. I'm here for that energy. I love Pepi so much. Whatever he decides, he's got me in his corner, and I've never rooted for. I probably wouldn't root for the Mexican national team. I would just root for him to score a ton of goals when he's not playing the U.S., but I don't want to get blamed for this. So we support him in whatever decision he makes. And now let me take over my full Andrew Wiebe narrative fun zone responsibilities. And I want to make it open-ended. I want this to be inclusive for all of us. So I'm going to say that this was a weekend of pure MLS chaos. And I want you guys to choose your favorite chaos moments of the weekend. And Doyle, let's begin with you.
I mean, you know exactly where we're going. We're going up to Montreal for the you know, CF Montreal versus the Red Bulls. And for 90 minutes, this was like a fairly normal game, right? The only like interesting thing was that Montreal couldn't, you know, they were playing really well and they couldn't quite put it away. Carlos Coronel was having made a couple of very good saves. I think there was some frustration building, but it felt like a normal game. And then minute and a half, I think, into stoppage time.
Like the 91st.
Bjorn Johnson, good friend of the show, you know, gets loose sort of down the left for Montreal and, you know, is dribbling into the box and looking for a pullback. And Amro Tarik dives in and has his arm flailing behind him. To me, it's stone cold penalty. 100% penalty. Yeah. That's what was called.
He almost had time to lift it up. He hit him with the changeup. It was a slow roller.
And now we got a, you know, it's a 1-1 game. Now there's a penalty into stoppage time. And like, okay, if you're a longtime Red Bulls fan, you probably have an idea of how this is going to end. But bear in mind that Montreal have been, I think, kind of cursed in MLS as well. And we saw this because as soon as the penalty was given, our good friend Bjorn and Mason Toy, who we love, started arguing about who was going to take the penalty kick,
which we always love.
Oh God, I adore it. And I actually tweeted about it as it was happening. I was like, they were just awarded a penalty, but now they're arguing. And this usually only ends one way. And there's like a great shot of Georgi Mihailovic sort of standing between the two of them. I think the audio caught Mason Toy saying like, give me the ball. Bjorn did not give him the ball and he took the penalty and Coronel saved it. And it looked like the Red Bull, like he celebrated, the whole Red Bull, his team celebrated. It was going to be a massive road point. And the game did not restart for a while afterwards. And like maybe 60 seconds, the referee goes over to the sideline, takes a look, makes the VAR signal. Coronel had come off the line. Like, okay, that's pretty metro right there. So now Bjorn has missed the penalty. Mason Toy, of course, who is the designated penalty taker for this team and should have taken the first one, steps up to the spot. And he does what I consider to be kind of a BS run-up where he pauses before he puts down his plant foot. And that pause causes Coronel to come off the line. Saves the shot, but it goes directly to VAR, and they do it all over again. Back for Montreal to take the third penalty. We're in like 5 minutes of this so far.
Yeah.
Montreal, Victor Wanyama, the DP captain of the team, steps up. Short run up, no pause. Takes an absolutely terrible penalty right down the middle that goes directly through Coronel's hands. 2-1 Montreal. I don't want to say it's a season saving win for Montreal, but they absolutely needed this one to stay in the playoff hunt. For the Red Bulls, it's now 1 win in 10 games from them. They are on the lowest points per game pace, third lowest in club history, whether it's Red Bulls or Metro Stars. They are on, you know, pace to miss the playoffs badly. And they haven't missed the playoffs since 2009. And this felt like, I mean, their season summarized. It was chaos. And there's just no explaining what happened. It was like, I still have a bunch of good Red Bull fan friends and my DMs and texts were blowing up. These people are miserable right now. Just absolutely miserable.
And it's understandable as well.
Brutal. I mean, the one thing I would say, Coronel, you see a lot of goalkeeper. He starts on the line each time. And you've seen a lot of goalkeepers now, I've noticed, stepping behind the line to begin to allow yourself that little jump forward. So when you then spring to action, you have that little wiggle room to be able to launch from there. Because you feel for goalkeepers, they're already at a disadvantage in a penalty kick situation, right? But then now it's being watched with a microscope, literally to see it. And I think that by the letter of the law, by the rule, it was the correct call on the field. I do think that it is difficult, especially when the takers are allowed to pause and run up and like slow down. And with all of the theatrics that you see now, which are essentially trying to bait the goalkeeper into moving or showing their hand early so they can go a different direction. So I think Coronel, when he takes a look at that, starting behind the line is going to be the way to go. But I do wonder if they'll adjust the rules to allow like some of the craziness. I mean, it didn't really, in this case, it didn't really affect it because Toy missed, but you feel for the goalkeepers. I normally don't feel that way as a striker. But
I do appreciate that we're in an MLS atmosphere where you have Shep Messing on the call, a famous goalkeeper, and then the next day, Tony Meola on the Chicago Fire. And Tony Meola's point was, if you miss twice from the PK spot, I don't care where I'm standing. You don't get to take it again, which I could kind of understand.
That's playground rules right there.
For sure. I also don't think you should be able to change the shooter. Like, this is your thing now. You missed. He was off the line. Now it's on Bjorn Johnson to figure out how to score it. I don't think you should be allowed to just take another person out, but it was wild, the entire scenario.
I've long thought that whoever gets fouled should have to take the penalty anyways. But maybe that's just because I couldn't get on a pen otherwise.
Oh, man, Kalen. Did you often draw them, though?
Yeah, definitely.
Good quick feet. The Kevin Paredes of the previous generation, Kalen Carr over here. But if you've been willing to take a date to the All-Star game, then you'd be a guy who would be able to steal a penalty kick. That's the difference. It's all mental.
We would have lost to. Anyways, let's move on.
You mentioned the Red Bull. For the Red Bulls, I thought Mark Fishkin put it well on Twitter. He said that this will be the worst they've had in the Red Bull Arena era, right? So you can quote unquote call it the modern era. For New York Red Bulls, for Montreal, you mentioned how big this was. You could see Sunisi Ibrahim came off the bench, scored, and Sam Piet was on the field celebrating as that ball went in the net. And like, you could feel the energy and emotion still coursing through this team. And this was kind of the scenario we talked about preseason of like, stick together, be a young group, and then come home. And now they're starting to get that bump and get that energy. And so they are currently in the playoff spots, which is pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, they can't drop points like this, right? Like, this was desperate because they're not good enough to go on the road and consistently win now in the meat of the season when teams are playing better and sort of shaking out where you understand exactly how you want to implement the manager's tactics and all of that. Like, Montreal, they're like, they have talent. They do. And they have some, I think, clarity of vision with Wilfred Nancy, but it's still a team that is not, they're not suited at this point to just go on the road and make up for a bad performance at home by getting 3 points basically anywhere at this point. So they absolutely needed this. And you're right. Like, just seeing the way they celebrated, like there's obviously some belief coming through this team. And the other thing is like, there's just the talent is sort of, I mean, just it's improving, right? Like, Kamal Miller has been better this year than I think anybody thought he was really going to be. Mihailovic,
I'm a Kamal Miller guy. Everyone knows that.
Mihailovic has been excellent. I know Toy was miserable in front of goal this game, but I thought it was his best all around game as a center forward. Joaquin Torres, a little bit selfish in the final third, but he brings something different.
It's just someone who wants the ball in those moments. It takes pressure off of Toy and a Mihailovic who probably can't do it for 90 full minutes of just pure chance creation.
Yeah, well, I mean, so Mihailovic is like a better chance creator when the game's not necessarily running through him. Mm-hmm. When he's able to like find his spots and like pick the ball up in pockets of space and hit that last pass rather than like just eliminating defenders off the dribble and stuff like that. But like, it was huge for Montreal. I still am not necessarily convinced that they're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to be in the fight until the very end. And they are a lot more fun to watch than they have been in a long, long time.
And I think that's a win for this season for them, if that's the case. Kalen, let's move on to your chaos moment of the weekend, Weeby narrative, whatever we call things on this show, which I normally don't pay attention to.
Well, it was last night, Portland, Seattle, just 8 goals, some incredible goals at that too. I think this was the 113th meeting between these two teams. So much history, best rivalry in MLS, all due respect to Toronto and Montreal, which popped off a couple of years back. But I think as far as consistency, history, and then even just as far as, I guess, relevance, when you look at how these two sides have really gone through the playoffs in the past 5 or 6 years or so, that it's appointment viewing. And I think, you know, we got to see almost too much of it last year, and it was all different because there was no fans. And there was the regional rivalries and stuff that happened, but this one felt like had some anticipation and hype to it. And boy, did it live up to the billing. Cause 2-2 is going back and forth. I thought Portland had better stretches for a while, but overall I just felt that Seattle looked like the team that had played in more matches like that. I don't know how else to describe it. They just seemed more savvy in those moments where just getting on the right end of things. I mean, there was just the small plays that can sort of compound itself and go from there. Where Alex Roldan just kind of has that extra little bit of patience to take the touch to the end line and then whip it across. And then really it came down to just these ruthless killers in the box. And Rui Diaz, now I think back on top of the Golden Boot, that one right after Portland scored where he gets the set piece and just smokes it was huge. And then Freddie Montero has been one of the signings of the season. We're going to talk about strikers. I think we're going to talk to Bobby Wood and just how important it is to find the right fit and place and system. And Freddie coming back, I think, has been huge for Seattle this year. And he took both of his chances very well. So I didn't even mention the Medrano goal.
Is that what we're going to call the second Freddie Montero goal? Oh, he took that chance very well. The second goal where he comes in on his left foot. And he absolutely smokes it. Like in a normal game, that would be by far the best goal. It's like barely cracking the top three at this.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even get to the Madranda finish, which was just like,
which is probably the goal of the year.
Insane. Seattle, I think a statement win for them to say, and I've been saying New England, New England, New England. Well, you know, Seattle fell a little bit down on the list, but now you see Ladero back into the team. You see Roldan back from the national team. Stephen Fry is supposed to be coming back, I think, at the end of the month, potentially. And now they've gotten experience for some younger players coming through.
Tencio comes off the bench in a game like this, which just wasn't a reality.
Nuhu hopefully comes back at some point. He's been out for the last couple months. So you start to look around and you say, this Seattle team is scary. They look scary right now. And I think they might be the best team.
I think they are the best team. It's because, like, I think...
You're about to get some social media love from the New England Revolution.
Shout out Willie. I just think they're top end when they have these guys healthy. And again, they're not yet all completely healthy and whole. But we saw in the second half what it looks like with Ladero out there. And we know that they have the ability to mix and match and keep him rested. I mean, we saw it in this game. Kellen Rowe got the first 45 minutes, and he was really good. And then they're able to just take him off at halftime, change the shape a little bit to more of a 3-5-2 rather than the 3-4-3. And it looks even better. And like Ladero helps establish more of a rhythm in central midfield, and obviously has a little bit of magic that can otherwise be missing from this team. Both fullbacks or wingbacks, because it's a back five, just like dominating their opponents 1v1. Like Alex Roldan just like ending Claudio Bravo on that first goal. Like just finding solutions, not only for games against the Timbers, where if like the Timbers leave the door open and kind of dare you to beat them defensively, and like that's how Seattle wins by four, but doing the same thing against Tigres earlier in the week. We saw how MLS teams kind of struggled this past week against Liga MX clubs. Well, Seattle was playing against Tigres, who are the team of the decade in North America, and they beat them 3-0. They smoked them. I don't think any other team, from what I've seen this year, has that gear. And they certainly don't have the depth that Seattle has shown throughout the season.
I thought it was interesting on the broadcast, John Strong and Stu Holden talking about Brian Schmetzer discussing the League's Cup game and how they sort of looked at it as a – because they've been in a slump of sorts. as a way to sort of like restart and kickstart them. And it worked out well for them. I just wanted to read this email from Rafa in Bologna, Italy, real quick, who said, I wrote to you in April, expected Freddie Montero to exceed expectations this season and that he'd be among the best, if not the best, intra-league signings of the year. And so far, he's proven it. He went to Seattle on a free transfer on a league minimum salary. Yet despite injuries, he's been incredibly productive, has 6 goals, with 3 of them being against Seattle's arch rivals, Portland, and 3 assists in just over 700 minutes, not to mention his League's Cup goal against Tigres. He looks just great as a second striker next to Rui Diaz in the 3-5-2 that you mentioned, Doyle. We hear all the time about the Roldan brothers, Rui Diaz or Joao Paulo, and deservedly so, but I believe he also does a ton and needs some love from extra time. So Freddie Montero getting that love, and you just look at that goal that he scores, and they're on the break, and Roldan's making a run, and Rui Diaz is making a run, and Joao Paulo's running with pace, and Portland's backline is just scrambling. And then you think about him playing at Vancouver the last few years, and it would have been Freddie with the ball trying to break and no one making runs around him that a defense has to really deal with. So he's enjoying life. It's been good for him. Let's talk about Portland real quick, because this was also one of the healthier and more complete squads we've seen from them in a while. Blanco's first start in 11 months. Claudio Bravo's back from the Argentine Olympic team. Zuparic's back. Mabiala. Both the Chara brothers. This was as... I can't remember his name. Center forward Niashkoda, which
he came in late.
And probably be a while before he's a starter. But outside of that, and Williamson, a fairly healthy squad. Is anyone worried about Portland?
I will say that the goalkeeper situation is a massive downgrade from Steve Clark, without being too unkind to the young man who was in net last night.
Because other people would like to be more unkind in the
match. Yes. I will say that the difference between Steve Clark and the fella who played is pretty significant.
And Jeff Atanella.
The underlying numbers, and I know that you guys, your eyes kind of glaze over when I talk about expected goals on this show, but so I'll make it brief. But the underlying numbers for Portland defensively all year have been terrible. Like worst in the league on expected goals against. And that's kind of carrying over from what we saw towards the end of last year. And now they've lost by 3 or more goals, I think 5 times in 18 games on the season, 3 times in the past 8 games. In the first half of the year, you could write it off as the injuries and maybe just a little bit of rust getting into the season and the team being kind of unsettled. They should be past that point. They're a veteran team. They were a championship team literally a year ago. Today, we were probably on this show talking about how the Timbers were clearly the best team at MLS's back. And that it just seems like a distant memory at this point. And I think there are 2 issues. One, as you mentioned, Gasman, they do not scramble well defensively. If you get them sort of off kilter at all, they just do not have the pieces on that back line who can do anything to slow an opposing attack down. Now that's one. And two is that they're scrambling all the time because their midfield is very poor at getting pressure to the ball. So teams are able to string together meaningful passes against them that sort of unbalances Portland. And in the past, like Diego Chara alone was enough to deal with all that. And Diego Chara is still one of the best defensive midfielders, ball winners in this league, but he's not what he was 3 years ago. I'm not sure he even is what he was a year ago. And that is taking a toll. So when they come up against a team as good in the attack as Seattle, Portland's going to look pretty bad. And that's what ended up happening. The silver lining is the return of Blanco, because for 45 minutes, I would argue that even with all those defensive issues and even with the scoreboard being what it was, I thought Portland was clearly the better team in the first half. The difference in the first half was the goalkeepers. Like Stephen Cleveland was awesome in that first half for Seattle, and the young man from Portland was very much not. So I still feel like Portland have enough or maybe too much in attack to end up missing the playoffs, but they're just defensively. And it, to me, it really starts in that midfield. There is just such a massive gap between them and the teams that are at the top of the standings in the West.
Now, I think getting Williamson back will right. help them a lot to that degree. I mean, they missed him for a long stretch with the national team, and then now he's been out. And so when you see Blanco coming back, I've sort of held off from saying this is time to panic for Portland, because I think we've had that question a number of times now. And I can understand it after last night as well. But I think he is such a big part of making the pieces around them better. Asprilla, who I think has actually been really good this season.
He's been awesome.
I think is probably in an ideal situation, more of a player you use off the bench, and can help change a game later on. And I think now that maybe Blanco's getting healthy and that begins to be more of a possibility with Niskota maybe coming back into the lineup. So I'm still holding out a little bit. And I think in these games, although the score was 6-2, which honestly, the way Seattle played was deserved in the quality of the goals. But I do think that these games can turn on you really quickly. And those couple little mistakes in the back, and I hate to point to the goalkeeper, but I think in this case, the fourth goal, especially from Ivicic, I think he, like that, giving up that rebound for Rui Diaz was one that you can't quite get back, because then next thing you know, it's one and then the next. And I just think those little tiny margins where you saw Cleveland be able to hold on to the ball and be ball secure was a big, big difference between the two sides. And it's not to point the finger at him, but I think in those matches, you know, those little things, it can, in either of these games, anytime these two teams play, it can turn quickly one way or the other and in a hurry. And I think we saw Seattle get on the good side of that.
By the way, if we're not talking about Cleveland as a starting goalkeeper somewhere next year, I will be absolutely shocked, because he has been immense for this team. And if you look at Seattle, like Steph Fry is about to come back, and he still looks like he's years away from retirement, or he did before the injury. I have no reason to think that that'll be different. But they also have in Andrew Thomas, who they picked up via some mechanism or another. I don't remember exactly. He is one of the best young goalkeepers in the American player pool. So they have and of course Spencer Richie, who I think is a very reliable backup. So they have this, with what Steph Cleveland has done over the past few months, and especially in a game like this one, anybody who needs a goalkeeper this offseason, I imagine will be, you know, calling up Garth Lagerway and seeing if a deal can be done, because the kid has been that good. And we saw it in this game, because if he wasn't superb in that first half, we're talking about Portland going into the break up 3-2 instead of down 2-1.
Anders in the chat mentioned Charlotte, come on down. Obviously, Tyler Miller was the backup to Stephen Fry, and LAFC went and got him, and now he's the starter for Minnesota United as well. I wanted to finish off on this and connect it to another one of the good games this weekend. Raul Ruiz Diaz,
Dartmouth kid is Cleveland, right?
Yeah, and Dartmouth, then Louisville.
Yeah, and then Edwards was a Northwestern, so they're going after the smart kids in smart goal, which is not usually the route I would take.
Wait a minute, Steph Fry, Cal is a goal.
And Berkeley, yeah. I got her. Yes.
Whoa, wait, no. He only mentioned good schools. He didn't want to talk about Cal. That was Kalen's decision to make. But now I'm going to move on to Raul Ruiz Diaz, who went back into the Golden Boot lead after this one. The free kick. I don't know that I've ever seen a person hit a free kick like that. It looked like he was hitting a ball that was rolling across him, the way he put it off the side of his foot. He's got 13 goals. And so we want to talk about his MVP push. And then Anders, at the same time, on Twitter this weekend, put out a poll about Daniel Shallowey's MVP push, a 2-0 win for SKC. So I guess the League's Cup thing is fine because they beat Dallas, whatever, Peter, I don't really care. So they get that 2-0 win, a little revenge for them after losing to Dallas 2 weeks ago. And Shallowey as well continues to put up numbers. I think many people had anointed Carlos Heel as the MVP. He is now out hurt. Do Ruiz Diaz and Shallowey have a pathway or a likelihood of being able to push into this convo?
I mean, if Carlos Heel stays hurt, and we don't know for sure because the Revs are not giving away much in terms of what the injury
actually is, let alone a timeline. So we don't really know, even though it's been reported, nothing official. If Heal stays hurt, then it stands to reason that somebody from either Seattle or Sporting KC is going to be the MVP. And it's usually the guy who scores more goals. So Rui Diaz would have the advantage, I think. And then for Shallowy, he's been best 11 caliber this year. He has been absolutely fantastic.
He's an MLS All-Star Wednesday, August 25th, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
I would argue that he's not even the team MVP. Like, he's very, very good. I mean, he's excellent. But I think Pulido, when he plays, elevates Sporting to just an absolutely different level in attack. But the actual MVP of that team has been Fontas. When Fontas plays, their defense has been superb. When he doesn't play, well, we saw what happened in the League's Cup. So it's, I mean, to me, if Heal comes back, he's probably going to waltz to, you know, maybe not a unanimous, but something close to it. If he doesn't, then Rui Diaz has the edge for sure.
You touched on it for me, though, for him in terms of the push and the narrative and all that, is he has helped them stay afloat without Pulido, who's been out for a ton of the time. Yep. He's now back. So if they push towards the supporter shield while Heal's out, I don't know that it will look like Daniel Shallowy is carrying them because Pulido is back and what he's able to do to affect the attack. But unreal season for Daniel Shallowy, so congrats to him. Let's finish out our chaos moments with mine, which is Nashville, D.C., 5-2. D.C. scores a minute and a half into this game. Credit to the legend, Oso Ben Bear, who texted us like 20 minutes before this game. And he's like, I think this game might be lit. And then it was 3-2 at halftime to Nashville. Dax McCarty, as I said, his 400th career MLS game, gets messages from a bunch of legends, a bunch of people he played with, including Bastian Schweinsteiger, who won a World Cup for the Chicago Fire. Obviously a huge moment for him. And for Nashville, it was like they go down 1-0 and you're back into the, wow, Nashville keeps playing from behind game states. If they're going to drop more home points, this is a team in trouble. And then you end the night with, this is a juggernaut. This is an untouchable team in Major League Soccer. We just interviewed Hernan Losada. We played him up. We played them up. And then they went and put them to the sword and just dominated all over. CJ Sapong gets two more goals. So the DPs are unnecessary off the bench. And Jamie Watson talked about it all game. The confidence Hani Mukhtar is playing with. He is a different player for them. He is comfortable, he is happy, and they're a different team when he's able to pull strings like that.
You missed the most chaotic part of this night. So the early goal was Frederick Briant getting like really good run and header on a corner to get in front of the defender and head it back post. And, you know, he celebrates and everything. And like 30 seconds later, Nashville's down the other end attacking, and the DC defense is all screwed up. And the goalkeeper, John Kempen, who had a nightmare, comes out, and Briant is there to head a shot clear right off the line. And then, like, Nashville get the rebound, cycle it around a bit, and as Briant had, like, dove into the net as he was heading that ball off the line, and as he's, like, you know, coming out of the goal, like coming out of the net and like running back into the play, Nashville have another shot that he clears off the line. He scored a goal and prevented a goal twice in the span of like 45 seconds. It was absolute chaos. And like when that happened, it was like DC's going to win this one 2-0 because this is going to like emotionally crush Nashville from having that sequence of events open their home game and, you know, playing from behind for the seventh time this year. And obviously, as you know, later pointed out, that's not the way it played out.
Yeah, I think one of those shots was from Alistair Johnson, who was unlucky not to get a goal. And he's had a couple cleared off the line in the past.
And he hasn't scored a pro goal yet.
Really? I think when I watch Nashville play, though, one thing that really, and why I think CJ Sapong has been such a great fit for them, is their wide play has been really good. And they have got really good service in the box. Leal, has the cross on the first one, where he can kind of drift out to the right-hand side. You see Mukhtar often moving over to the left side. They've got just like good wing play, and they're getting balls in the box. And you know CJ Sapong, can get up and bang him in. And when you add that confidence to it, and then you have this balance of like, okay, now you need to worry and collapse on Sapong, but then you've got Mokhtar who can kind of get out wide and he gets isolated one-on-one, starts causing problems as well too. And so this Nashville team, I think we had this idea of them that they were just a team that was going to maybe defend and use set pieces to get goals.
Not at all.
That's not what's happening. No. No. That's not this Nashville SC team. And I think you're right. The confidence within the group is there, but I really do. I think you hit it right on the head. And Watson did during the broadcast was Hani Mukhtar just looks like at times he's throwing step overs. He's setting up players. His service has been good. And there are times where he's been dangerous in the past, right? He's always kind of had that little bit of flair to his game, but it hasn't really consistently turned to goals or assists. Now that's starting to happen, and happen in a big way. And his relationship with Sapong, I think, has been really key for them.
And Sapong occupies he's always been so good at this, occupying defenders and just using his strength and his technique to not just hold the ball up and be a problem for the guy on his back, but actually to compress the entire defense. Because once he has a guy on his back, the other help is required. You have to come over. And he's been able to use that skill set to get Hani Mukhtar and Leal, to a lesser extent, into a ton of space. And Mukhtar, on top of that, is playing more as a second forward now. It's not his response. He's wearing the 10, but it's like an old-fashioned number 10. Right? We think of the 10 in a lot of ways as the guys who are, in central midfield kind of running the show and pulling the strings. And he was not suited to doing that. And now he has less responsibility for that and more responsibility to find space, find chances, create chances, be a creature of the final third. And Sapong has freed him up to do that. And as you said, David, he's keeping two DP center forwards on the bench. Like Ake Loba, he's coming off the bench now. Jandre Cadiz didn't even make the bench for this game. CJ Sapong, I think 80 career goals. Some of the best hold-up play in the league. He was a free agent. He was a free agent this past winter. Any team in the league could have had him. He obviously landed in the right spot, but there got to be GMs around MLS kicking themselves for not realizing what he could do for their team.
For Nashville, I think his second goal was an 18-pass sequence that went from sideline to sideline. So you talk about playing from behind. That's an issue. Game states creates these situations, but they got to 1-1 and they continue to open up and play. And then 2-1 and 3-1 when Ola scored at 3-2, which was a gorgeous ball from Paul Areola over the top. And I thought Ola impressive to not stab at it with his head, but to let it come through to his foot. That's when I thought, this is going to be like 3-3 and Nashville's going to be frustrated. Yeah. I want to give one last shout out. I don't really know what to call it. Alex Buehl comes off the bench, scores a goal, makes it 4-2. It feels like the game's over. Then he draws a penalty. And Ake Loba, your multi-million dollar DP, comes off the bench. And Alex Buehl takes the penalty. And I assume Gary Smith didn't say anything. And why would he at that point of the game? But you think that's a chance to get him a goal. But Alex Buehl took control of the situation and banged it home. Credit to him. So Nashville continues on in what has been a bizarre streak. But they are now one of the top teams in the league. We're going to get to a few of our tiers and how we feel about these teams, but I want to close out on one last Sunday game before we get to our celebrating soccer moment. And this one's for Weeby. He's out. We feel for him. The father's back. Orlando! And whatever else he would say 15 times. Joseph Martinez, his first goal at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta in 2 years, which was awesome. A 1-0 win over LAFC. And I think Doyle, is just exciting to see him get that goal. Barco's pass, the fans in the stadium. I couldn't see most of it because of the sun, but I assume it was really impressive. And it just, this feels like an emotional moment that Atlanta needs to move forward under Gonzalo Pineda.
I mean, it was clearly an emotional moment for like a cathartic moment, like an exhale, because this is not, I mean, Joseph's got 5 goals in about 750 minutes this year, which is an elite goal scoring rate in this league. He now has 3 in his last 3 appearances, which is obviously huge. But the way this happened with him getting out into transition, moving really well, he's still not moving 100%. He doesn't look like the pre-ACL Joseph. But he was there was more zip to his game, and then just being ruthless when he's in that spot. It felt like a significant step back towards being the Atlanta that was so much fun in from 2017 to 2019, who were always looking to get out into transition. And Atlanta fans are overjoyed to hear Gonzalo Pineda praise the way the team has performed under Rob Valentino, because the team has frankly been much more fun and much better under Rob Valentino than they were under Gabriel Heinze or honestly Frank DeBoer. And Pineda said, I'm not actually planning to change much. I like the way they've played under Rob. And if you look at the way the Sounders played when Pineda was a top assistant, it makes sense. The Sounders are all about being good on the ball, but they use that skill on the ball to be a devastating transition team. That's what this Atlanta team is actually built for, not the type of positional play that we've seen attempts at over the past two and a half years.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add, best thing that you could say about it was the shot clock from start to finish. The throw, by the time the ball comes in on the throw in, 12 seconds till the ball hits the back of the net. When we saw Atlanta United in past, that kind of hypercharged energy is where you're going to be able to get, and direct play is going to get Joseph in positions where once he gets on the move and gets ahead of steam, it's hard to get an eye on him, hard track. I mean, give it also, I think Moreno's got the little Meg that was pretty dirty to start the whole thing off. But 12 seconds, I'm not saying that's going to happen all the time, but it's a good underlying number to keep an eye on.
Rob Valentino entering Connor Kacer territory of just did it as an interim, unreal numbers, and just move on from there. They're both potential Hall of Famers with the record that they put up as coaches in their short time. Let's move to my favorite moment of the weekend. Bobby Wood, the game winner for RSL against Austin FC, our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend, presented by Continental Tire. Bobby Wood, he struggled with injuries. His club situation's been chaos. It's about 3 years now for him where he just hasn't been able to enjoy the game. He talked about wanting to be here, wanting to be a part of this family, get playing time. We're going to have an interview coming up with him in just a moment. But Kalen, he scores the go-ahead goal, runs to the corner. Basically, three generations of women in his family are there to cheer him on, and he's able to celebrate with his young daughter. This was just cool to see.
Yeah, it was awesome. It's gotten some good pickup and attention, which is deserved because, just going through a tough time. I think we've all been through a tough time not being around family much, and seeing his family now coming back to the U.S. and getting this fresh, clean slate in Salt Lake, and then having them all at his match to score a goal and go over and celebrate with them was really awesome moment. Definitely worthy of celebrating, and he took his chance well, and it was a big result for Salt Lake, who I believe now are sixth in the West, so right in a really good spot to be this late in the season. And we've seen them sort of have to fight their way in the past or be hovering right around it, and this pushes them a little bit further to feel a little bit more secure about their playoff space.
It's what we've seen him do best in his career, finding space in the box, being a pure finisher, showing his strength, and then to bounce it down, that little bit of creativity in the goal. But for more on that, let's talk to the man himself. We spoke with Bobby Wood a little bit earlier today. All right, and now let's get to our AT&T 5G call to the field. And who else, after a weekend like this, after what I tweeted out was the best goal celebration combo of the year, we had to have on RSL's own Bobby Wood. Bobby, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
So take us into Saturday night. You walk out on the field after everything you've been through over the last 2-3 years, You know, not playing, injuries, being away from home. You walk out on the field in the starting lineup in front of your family. Yeah. What's going through your head?
Yeah, I was just kind of nervous, but it was just nice to have my family there. And, you know, it was exciting game for me. It was awesome to be able to play in front of them.
So you get the goal, beautiful header, and then the celebration. Did you know that you were going to run to your family? Walk us through all that.
I really wanted to score for my daughter because it was her first game seeing me live, and I don't know, it just kind of happened. It was just a reaction, I guess you could say, and I saw them and took advantage of them being right there by the field.
I know times have been weird lately. You haven't been able to see family as much as we would all like to. Was this their first RSL game?
Yes, this was their first RSL game. You know, it was the first time my grandma saw me live and my mom's first game and at Salt Lake and my wife's first game. So it was good to have my sister's first game. So, yeah, it was good to have them all there.
Wait, so your daughter's first game, but also your grandma's first game, and she doesn't get a kiss on the goal celebration? Come on.
Not that much time, but... Yeah, I mean, she came from Japan, so it was good to have her here, and it was a good feeling.
I know you're from Hawaii. What are some early memories of growing up playing soccer there? What was that like?
Just like chilling, having a tent out on the field, staying there all day, playing like 2-3 games a day, eating poke and spam musubis for lunch and breakfast, and that's basically it. it was cool. I mean, it was just a total different vibe than it is, I think, on the main island. And yeah, it was just different. I guess it's just an island life, and it's hard to explain unless you kind of grew up with it.
I know that there's been a number of players who have come from Hawaii, actually, and some young guys coming through USL, and I think the Sounders have a connection there as well, too. I guess, what do you think is special about the Hawaiian player or is unique that has allowed, you know, from such a small set of islands to come through and get all the way to the national team and you played abroad? And what do you think it is that makes the Hawaiian player unique?
It's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't say there's a lot of us coming out of Hawaii just because the opportunity, it's hard to get out. But I think the island's doing pretty good for what we got. And, you know, we just have to kind of, I think everyone just has to work hard. And, you know, if everyone works hard, then I think they can get out of it.
So Hawaii to Salt Lake City, they are slightly different in temperature and climate and geography as well. What's been the initial experience so far in Salt Lake?
I think the altitude, it's been the first month or so was pretty hard to get used to. It was just the heat, you know, it was just completely different than what I've never lived in an environment that was like, I guess, this intense. So it took a while getting used to, but I think I've adapted pretty good now. And I think just the altitude and heat.
What made you choose Salt Lake? What drew you to the opportunity and ultimately your decision?
I think just the vibe that the club gives out, you know, I wanted to come to a place where it felt very tight knitted and the group, you know, the group of guys were very tight, and that's kind of what they told me to expect. And, you know, my expectations have been through the roof so far. You know, the team has been amazing. The coaching staff have been amazing. Everyone, the staff, and, you know, it's a real tight knit group, and it's exactly what I wanted to come to. And I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to be at this club.
So when you decided that you were going to leave Hamburg, was it you wanted to come to MLS? Was it, let's look at the offers out there? How did your process and this move come to be?
You know, I think mentally I was ready to come home. You know, I was in Germany for 14 years. And, you know, since 14, I've seen my mom and family once a year. So just mentally, I was ready to come home. You know, having a second daughter, it just felt right to come home and, you know, have my family grow up here and be closer to my family and, you know, just kind of be closer to family, have a home feeling. And just mentally, I was ready for that.
What is the thought process? Because now we see a ton of young players going over to Europe.
Yeah.
About what the move from Europe to MLS means and what it can do for your career and your perception of this league before you ever got here.
Honestly, it's the what I thought about this league is kind of what, yeah, it, well, how do I say it? Like, what I thought about this league is true. You know, it's an athlete's league. Everyone's fit, everyone's strong, everyone's crazy fast, and it's a up and down game, and it's difficult in its own way. It's a completely different style of play than in Germany, but it's still extremely hard. You know, I think the league is, has grown so much with fans, the stadiums, the training facilities. It's crazy how great everything has been here. And, you know, the league's, like I said, it's extremely difficult. And I think people that come from Europe or wherever, when they start playing in this league, they're, I think everyone's kind of shocked at how high the level is, you know, the individual qualities and stuff like that. So that's just something that, yeah, it's been fun playing in a different league, and it's just been exciting to experience something new now.
We've seen a big influx of young players developing in MLS, some going abroad and getting their opportunities there too. Is there anybody that's maybe caught your attention, I guess specifically from the Salt Lake program that you think is, you say has a big future, you know, might get that type of attention?
I think I've been here a little bit too short to see like the youth players, because of COVID, everything's kind of separated right now. So a lot of the younger players haven't been training as much probably as I think the club normally would like to, but just the league in general, you know, a couple of years ago, everyone kind of didn't look at the MLS as a crazy development league, but now you got everyone looking for at the MLS for that new young talent. And I think you see that every transfer window, you know, you got all these scouts and all these players looking at the MLS now, and it's exciting to see the, for example, the national team, how many young players there are just balling in the top leagues. And, you know, a lot of the MLS players doing well as well. And, you know, it's really cool to see how much the league and the national team, the youth development has developed. It's exciting. It's really cool.
You led the way. Now we're pumping players into German youth teams. And now it all starts to flourish. I want to ask you about RSL, though, and what this team can be, because honestly, the outside expectations from a lot of people around the country and, you know, around the region aren't that high. But this club's in the playoff spots halfway through the season. And the one thing I get when I watch you guys play is you just never quit. And it sounds simple, but it seems to work for you. What can this RSL team be this year?
Yeah, I mean, we have high potential. You know, I think we have a great group of guys. You know, the mentality is, it's all there. Everyone's fit. Everyone's there mentally. You know, we got a hardworking team. You know, everyone from top to bottom just wants to work hard. And, you know, I think it's a process of just building that even, you know, more and more. And as the season goes on, hopefully we'll be able to build, you know, a step at a time. And for me, I think we have a very strong team, and, you know, I don't think we should be, you know, looked down on as much as a lot of people do, maybe.
I don't, though. I don't. Yeah. Everyone else, they're the ones making the mistake. Take me into a locker room with Freddy Juarez. He's a young manager, but he seems to have a connection with this club. You've obviously mainly worked under German and European managers. What have you seen from how he operates and you know, how the club's been built?
Yeah, I mean, when I had a talk with him, he was one of the main reasons why I came. You know, he made me feel comfortable, and I haven't had that coach player bond in a while. You know, he's so honest. He tells it like it is. You know, he's not trying to control everyone and, you know, be some type of dictator or anything like that. He lets the players kind of, you know, he shows a lot of trust in players, but he also expects that same respect back. And, you know, I think he's done a very good job of finding that balance between showing a lot of respect and, you know, trusting a lot of players and everything like that. So it's been very nice to have that type of coach at this club. And, you know, I think the team is feels the same way. You know, it shows when we fight. Maybe we don't play as good as we should sometimes, but you know, everyone's fighting, and I think that shows a lot within the squad.
Well, it's super important to be in a good situation. You mentioned the sort of trust of the manager and the environment around you, and then most importantly, getting minutes and getting goals, and confidence for a striker is everything. Mm-hmm. Is the national team still something that is a part of your goals? And have you had any conversations with the Federation?
No, I mean, I haven't talked to the Federation in a while, but you know, it's not surprising. I haven't played in a while. So, you know, with the high level talent that the national team has now, it's not anything I expected, or it's something I expected not to be in contact. But, you know, right now for me, it's always an honor to play with the national team. But right now, like I said, it's all about RSL. You know, I think I just need to do my thing here. And, you know, once I make that step and get that flow, you know, we can look forward to maybe playing with the national team again. But for now, I'm just going to concentrate on getting my form back, playing as much as I can, and just having fun again.
You mentioned you haven't been playing those games. It was your spot as the starting center forward for the national team, and then not getting those minutes over the last few years. Do you have any regrets or disappointments with maybe the way things went for you in Germany and the way this has all played out?
Yeah. I mean, you never want to just, you know, be in a tough situation, but you know, there was a lot of things outside of soccer that was happening at the club I was at. And, you know, it's something that was tough. Obviously, it wasn't an easy time, but you know, I grew as a person, and you know, I don't regret anything that's happened to me. You know, even though there were a lot of tough situations, it helped me grow mentally, and you know, there's nothing I regret about it. It just, I look at it as a lesson, and you know, I moved on from it. You know, I look at it as a lesson, and you know, it happened, and that's just how it is now.
I would assume from your national team time and being in Europe that you knew Rubio Rubin before you got to Salt Lake. Is that true?
Yeah. When was it? He was at a London camp with me a while ago. He was crazy young. He was, you know, Rubio's always had that talent, really. But, you know, he's had a tough path as well, and he's an amazing player. For me, he's extremely underrated. I think people need to put a little bit more respect on his name sometimes, because he can do a lot, and I think the future for him is extremely bright. He's a hardworking, hungry guy, and you know, it's nice to see someone that's been through so much, you know, come back up again and show what he can do. And hopefully we'll be able to play together a little bit.
I was about to ask. So are you guys battling it out for a spot? Does that make you better? Do you enjoy watching him do his thing?
At the end of the day, it's the coach's decision, but you know, we push each other every day. You know, he's a great player. You know, I know it sucks that right now we're playing with one up top, but you know, in football, things change all the time, and you know, we're both ready at any moment, you know. And like I said, he's an amazing player, hungry, talented, has a lot of qualities, and you know, I would love to get a chance to play with him one day, and we'll see.
So I want to close you out on a guy you do get to play with, but could also literally play anywhere. I'm pretty sure Demir Krylak would score goals if you put him each goal if he wanted to. What is this guy great at, and how many does he bang in training? Because he scores from every spot on the field in games.
Yeah, I mean, he's Damian. He's got a good got a good nose for the goal, I guess you could say. He, especially with crosses and stuff, he's always in that right spot. And you know, we got to use that as good as possible. So it's good to find a balance of what his position is, what his best position is on the field.
Well, we're looking forward to watch him do his thing in the All-Star game in about a week and a half, and RSL to continue on Wednesday night against the Houston Dynamo. This has been Bobby Wood, goal scorer this weekend, father of the year right now. At least for now, you got to keep scoring every time your daughter shows up. Bobby, thanks for taking the time.
Congrats, man.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thanks so much to Bobby Wood once again for joining us. Excited to see him do his thing now. It was cool to hear him talk about Rubio Rubin, that level of respect, pushing each other. Freddie, he said, you're open and honest. He wants to play up top with his boy. Let's see the Rubin. Let's see the Rubin Wood front line. Although, again, maybe you throw Krylak behind them, and then you just got goal scorers everywhere. Have Aaron Herrera bombing balls from deep for them. Last thing on this game, I have to say, and we are not instant replay, so you can go hear what Charlie thinks about this. The Julio Cascante red card was one of the worst I've seen in a very long time. And I know Josh Wolf agrees, which is not really great support for me because he's a bit biased in the moment, but bizarre one to see go down. Congratulations, though. RSL deserved to win. I was hoping this would be a corner that they're going to turn and push to the playoffs. So good start for them. Again, Houston Dynamo, they have on Wednesday night, full midweek of slate of games. We'll obviously hit all of that.
I'll add real quick, what I liked from Bobby's interview and just talking to about the type of player RSL is going for is they're going for guys that are looking, that have maybe a little bit of a chip on their shoulder or have, you know, are really trying to find their way back into form. And when you talked about kind of like that never give up attitude, I feel like they've, from a personality or a pro player profile perspective, they've got a pretty good, clear idea of the type of guy they want to go after and it seems to be working.
You're going to send them your resume?
I have fallen a little too far, I think. Sadly,
Caleb, we get you into that altitude. It takes that little bit of pressure off the knees.
Yeah, when he said altitude, yeah, I forgot about that. No thanks.
So let's jump into some final few games and some final few teams. Doyle, you put out your tiers column last week, revisiting what you did in preseason of how these 27 clubs in MLS break out. MLS Cup contenders have enough talent, not there yet. Need maybe one more piece. Let's start with one of your tier two teams, which was the LA Galaxy. They get an unbelievable win at Minnesota. Jonathan Klinsmann, ridiculous performance, has not played a ton over the last year guy. And a half. Jonathan Klinsmann's a rec league guy?
Berkeley guy.
Oh, I thought I heard
Berkeley goalkeeper pipeline is strong. So anyways, continue.
Yeah, well, it helps because they can't score goals over the last 15 years. So they kind of need it. Jovicic as well gets the start with Chicharito out. And to me, Doyle, their ability to continue to get results without Chicharito pushes them into that tier one because they are no longer reliant on one piece who is an MVP candidate when healthy.
So I think that is the argument. And I'm not there yet.
I know I made the argument.
I still think they're a tier two team. Cabral scored a wonderful goal in this game. And like that goal in a lot of ways is emblematic of how Greg Vanney wants his team to play. Passes that cut out multiple defenders, getting to players on the run, wingers playing sort of outside in. It was like they're very good at that, and they need Cabral and Grancier or one of the other young wingers, maybe it's Cameron Dunbar if he starts getting more minutes, to be goal dangerous. And they really haven't been this year. Like even they've managed to put together some results without Chicharito, but so much of it has come down to can the center forward score. The fact that this game didn't, and the fact that they were, I think, clearly the better team for about 75 minutes on the road at a very good Minnesota United side that had one loss in their previous 15, I want to say, or maybe 13, it was a statement win. But I'm still not, like, if you watch that Galaxy game and then you watch the level that the Timbers or the Sounders played at against the Timbers or what New England's done over the past 5 months, with what Sporting have done, even in the face of injuries and missing guys to the Gold Cup and selling their D-mid to a Serie A club for $10 million, I still think the Galaxy are a cut below that. Which is not to say that they can't, make it to MLS Cup and maybe win their first trophy of the TAM era. But I'm still comfortable with them in tier two.
The fact that we're even having this conversation though is pretty incredible, right?
I mean, August 16th, 2021. Any other year, we would have Greg Vanney as like the runaway coach.
All those other coaches and clubs you mentioned are Sporting Kansas City, were at the top of the Western Conference last year. Seattle, who's perennially there. New England, who's emerged. So it's kind of like the fact that they're even right on that Edge is right where I think Vanny wants to see his team. And I think even, I think as they head towards the playoffs, if they get a fresh Chicharito back, who's, you know, eager to get back into the team and starts running again, and then you have all these other guys that have gotten minutes and they've strengthened the team as well too. Cabral's going to need to have some moments too, if they're going to go deep and find a playoffs, because at some point, I understand that Chicharito is the main guy and it's going to go through him. But when we've seen teams in the past in the playoffs who go far and win, Seattle, Toronto in the past, you have to find secondary options as well. You have to be able to find a secondary scorer or somebody that can help get an important goal or a clutch goal or set piece or whatever it might take. So to have some, they've got some pretty dynamic options. So in some ways, the fact that they're getting results now without Chicharito will give these players a little bit, tell Vanny a little bit more of who he can trust and who he can't trust and how he can use guys even when Chicharito does get back involved as they head down the stretch run.
It's been a good few weeks for the LA Galaxy, especially with the moves they've been able to make. Let's look at our 22 under 22 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor, which goes into our tier three team from your article, Doyle, that I wanted to talk about. Cole Bassett gets an assist in the win versus Houston, played at wing back in this one. Austin Trusty at left wing back, him at right wing back, which didn't think I was going to be saying that in preseason. Colorado are now fourth in the Western Conference, and they have two games in hand pretty much on everyone around them. Do you guys still feel that they are a tier three team, or is this a Rapids team that needs to be in an MLS Cup Supporter Shield conversation?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm going to leave the tiers up to... And the other thing, too, is it's hard to read too much into, sadly, wins against my Dynamo right now. I think we're 12 games on... without a win at this point. So it's been pretty brutal for Houston. The thing I like about this Colorado team is the kind of wealth of options. Now, maybe this is also a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the tier one teams, you're seeing players emerge as the go-to guy who's going to get you goals. And then you start asking questions of who's the secondary option in Colorado. And this is no like diss on them, but it seems like they have a wealth of number two options, right? As opposed to having one single striker. Sometimes they get goals off Barrios. Sometimes they get goals off Shinyashiki. Sometimes, and they've found timely goals to get results, which bodes well. I just do wonder as you get to, I guess now I've found my way back into the tier system, but is you, there's no escape the Doyle tiers. Tears, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Doyle crying. That's what we're.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, there's no escaping that. I think that might be the only argument to say that they're still a notch or two below the very top, but they're getting it done.
There is an argument in the Doyle winning an MLS playoffs that being good at set pieces is an elite category
for sure. No, it's
and they're and pretty good at that.
They're great on set pieces. They have one of the best defenses in the league. Robin Fraser has done some amazing work changing, you know, formation, mm-hmm. Shifting players around into spots where they can be better. I think honestly adjusting the principles of play, because Yunus Nnamdi was supposed to be the man for them this year and he got hurt right away, and without, they just don't have a central midfielder with that type of creative vision. And so the team is really oriented towards getting Barrios in behind. They've been really good at that. And like that checks a lot of boxes. They're a really solid team. This is their ceiling. Like if they went into a playoff game against Seattle or Sporting KC or LA, that's Rui Diaz, Pulido, and Chicharito. Like Colorado has Diego Rubio. And we've seen this for 25 years now. The team with the better center forward is always going to be the favorites in the playoffs. You need that guy. Colorado doesn't have that guy. Now, the caveat here is that while the trade and transfer window is still open, the rosters aren't locked. You can still make signings for guys who are free agents. And there are a number of free agent center forwards available around the world. Colorado have two open DP slots. Their cap is nice and clean. So if they want to make a signing like that, they can do it. But if they don't, like, I think this is you know, a top four team in the West is probably about as high as this group can climb.
Speaking of that, let me close you out on AM mailbag. Tyler from Kentucky says, with the transfer window dust settling, is there any glaring within league's deals that could have been made that would have benefited both clubs? Example, getting a guy off the books, filling a need. Was there any big one that you thought a team missed out on? And these are no's from both of you.
No, you cut out.
Oh.
You were glitching out. Yeah.
You were glitching out.
Okay.
Were there any that you saw? Because like, there's none. I mean, in retrospect, if you're Austin, you probably would have wanted to call Nashville about Daniel Rios. I think Daniel Rios is a starting center forward in this league. Mm-hmm. And he's what, fourth on the depth? Well, third now, because Cadiz doesn't even make the game day roster. But I would have made that call. Like, Austin getting a center forward is a big one, big and obvious one to me.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. I thought Jan Gregus would go somewhere in the league because I think he has talent, and I don't think Minnesota wants to carry his contract if they're not playing him. I don't have a landing spot for him specifically. That makes a ton of sense. And Houston, Carrasquilla looks like a really good pickup just from one game in. So if that was the team, it doesn't make a ton of sense for them. But thanks to Tyler in Kentucky for the question. Thank you guys for taking the time to join me here today. Andrew Wiebe will be back on Thursday. He will lead with 37 minutes about NYCFC because he took that part of the rundown and he took it with him. So we just didn't know what to talk about. We couldn't find it. But Tati Castellanos continuing to do things just specifically to spite Matt Doyle when he gets the opportunity, if he can. I'm David Goss, Kalen Carr, Matt Doyle. Thanks so much for joining us and have a good rest of your week. Enjoy some midweek MLS action. And we'll, of course, be back on Thursday. We'll be right back.